Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Joanne Roberts, a recent filmmaker who's produced a documentary called The Bonnikers. And for those of you not familiar with what the Bonnikers are, in fact, for a long time were in many areas here on East Hampton. Tell us a little bit about them and how they got here and why you chose them.
Well, I've been coming out here since I was a kid, Dan, since I was probably 12 years old. And when my parents moved into a house in Louse Point in the 80s, I started really learning about the Bonnikers. And the Bonnikers are the descendants of the first European settlers here on the east end of Long Island. And their families came over from Kent and Dorset in England around 1640s, and they landed in the area around Accabonac Harbor, hence the name Bonnikers, which was taken from the indigenous name. Accabonac meant root vegetable in the indigenous languages out here. So they've been fishing and farming ever since. And as you can imagine, here in the middle of the Mansionfeld Hamptons, it's gotten harder for them every year, and they're really struggling to survive. And, you know, as I said a few minutes ago, my parents had this house on Louse Point, which was adjacent to Accabonac Harbor. And, you know, we watched the boats going in and out of the harbor every day. And over the years, the numbers dwindled and things really started to change. As you know, the town, which was mainly mom and pop shops, became filled with Gucci, Pucci, Prada, and all of that, you know. And really, it's a very different place than it was originally.
Besides the influx of well-to-do New Yorkers, what were the causes of the decline of what the Bonnikers stood for? About how many of them were there altogether in the community? Did you get
Now I'd say there are a few hundred people, and maybe even more, who are still part of the original families, the Lesters, the Bennets, the Millers, the Kings, the Edwards. And, you know, and some of them were upstreeters, you know, had more money, lived in the town of East Hampton. And the Bonnikers were really the fishermen and farmers who lived below the bridge. I started learning about them from my next door neighbor, Dave Bennett. And Dave comes from a family of whalers. And he grew up in the house next door. He's 87 years old. He, you know, the house had one light bulb. There was no private property. You could go wherever you wanted to go. He walked to school every day, you know, and the Bonnikers, there's still people fishing and there's still people farming, but less and less over the years because, you know, aside from us, second homeowners who've come out here, we've created a lot of pollution in the waters. So the waters have become more polluted over the years. The government regulations have made it really hard for the fishermen to continue to catch enough fish to survive. There's been global warming, climate change, you know, and it's harder for people to be able to afford the lifestyle out here. So, you know, when you saw the documentary the other day, you know, Charlie Nichols, whose family, his wife, her family were the Lesters. It's a tricentennial farm. But he was saying, although his kids have fishing licenses, it's very hard for anybody else to get into the industry because Charlie is a fisherman and a farmer. Costs a lot of money to buy the boats, costs a lot of money to live here. As our town is changing, it's harder and harder for the fishermen to survive.
Well, the community, I came here a generation even before you. And at that time, and you probably still saw it as well, this was a very closed community in the sense that They all knew one another, and they all had stories to tell about what they did and who their friends were, which is what you've captured. They also had their own, I wouldn't call it a language. It was really an accent and different words meaning different things. And it was completely different from anything in the United States.
Right. Which is fascinating, right?
Yeah. Which made them stand out in a way that they probably hadn't intended. They just came here to do that.
And, you know, and it's one of the more interesting small traditional cultures that are still left in our country, I think, European cultures. And yes, they don't have their own language, but they do have, as you say, a dialect, a very strong English accent and phrases like, yes, yes, bub, you know, meaning yes, yes, friend. And, you know, you can talk to Albie Lester, who can give you a course on the Bonnic dialogue. And in fact, we did one of our community gatherings, because we've done a lot of community gatherings with the historical societies out here, was at Prudence Talmadge Carabines, she started the East Hampton Farm Museum. And we did a little talk about the Bonnic language and the dialect, and it was fascinating.
So when did you think you might, I mean, had you ever made a film before?
I started out as a teacher, and then I spent from the time I was about 25 on working in television. And I worked at Children's Television Workshop. I did a lot of educational programming. When I was 40, I started a television production company and did a lot of programming for kids, building communities around the content I was creating, which has always been important to me. So I did one project that aired across the country about kid inventors, with kids presenting models of their inventions on the show. It was a game show. And then I did political shows for kids. And then in 1995, I started an internet company and built communities for kids and teens. But this is the first independent project that I've ever done. And it's the first time I've taken the director's credit, Dan. So it's very, very different. You know, I was used to getting money from media companies or from venture capitalists when I started my internet company. But this documentary is not that kind of project. You know, it's a small 1 hour film that, you know, aired on WLIW and has been airing locally. We've had 8 local screenings filled to the brim so far. You know, the community support's been incredible. And we're going to be airing on public television stations nationally starting in January. It's been a challenge in many ways, you know, raising money for a small independent documentary was much harder than any of the funding I'd ever gotten before from media companies. But I did get sponsorship from the New York Foundation of the Arts, and that made it possible for people's contributions to be tax deductible. So we built a community with these small gatherings that we did at the Farm Museum, at the Duck Creek Arts Center, at the Springs Library and Historical Society. And, you know, we would have exhibit tables on the grounds with people like Dave Bennett sharing his decoys and Brent Bennett talking about how the pound traps worked, and Albie Lester showing his wampum collection that he created. And we really focused on introducing people to the traditions and the history and the culture and the stories and the wisdom of the community, which is really one of the things that's been most important to me, because there's such down-to-earth basic values that I think more important now than ever.
Well, I would agree with you entirely, but tell us about the culture you discovered or you saw.
Well, I mean, you know, when you drive around in the Springs and in Amagansett and parts of north of the highway, you see boats in the driveways, you see poles and nets in the off season. And I had always wanted to know more. I was really intrigued by the pound traps. I don't know if you've ever gone out to the pound traps, but, you know, when you walk along the bay, you see these tall poles and nets and boats going out. And those traps have been used for thousands of years. They were originally used by the indigenous population out here.
How did they work? Not between jobs.
How they work? Well, there are poles that go out into the harbor, and there's a net in between. And the fish, as they're coming down along the beach, get forced along the line of the fence. And then the fence has nets that funnel them into the traps. And then the fish get stuck inside there and they can't get out. So when people watch the documentary and Brent Bennett shows people how those pound traps work, which kind of blew my mind. So, you know, there's that fishing culture. And then there are people who go out like Brent Bennett, Danny and Paul Lester and other fishermen who go out from the town dock. And they have the smaller boats, you know, they don't have the big boats that go out of Montauk, but they're the smaller boats that go out of Three Mile Harbor, Anak Harbor, and Gardner's Bay, you know, and mostly are day fishermen, you know, and different fish are running throughout the year. So they're catching different fish. But, you know, I was talking to Brent the other day, and he said that this was a really bad season because the seals have like grown in numbers. And they followed his boat on the side of Gardner's Island that you don't see from the side that we're on. There are tons of seals. So that's another thing that's changing things for fishermen.
You mentioned about down to earth and values and stuff. Can you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. Let's talk about Brent for a minute, and then I'll talk about Charlie Nichols and the people who work on the farms. For Brent, he just wants to be out on the water every day, you know, and he appreciates the sea, the sky, the beauty, you know, and Will Lester too, who's one of the youngest people in our film. He just said, I'm just out there all day. I don't have to talk to anybody. I just have the beauty of land and the sea and the fish, you know, and they're really connected to nature. They're in nature in their work. You know, that's what's important to them. And Charlie Nichols, he said, you know, it's like, I just get so much pleasure of planting the seeds, pulling up a head of lettuce, feeding it to the people who live out here. You know, it's just such a grounded way of life, right?
Absolutely. And also visit each other. You don't see people being upset if someone walks up to the front door and knocks on it.
Right. And you know, it's interesting, Dan. I mean, remember, because I started filming on my iPhone and I interviewed Prudence Talmadge Carabine, and when she told me that she had 3,800 cousins in town, you know, that everybody was related to somebody else. And then Deanna Tucannon said, her mom said, be careful who you talk to in school and what you say, because you may be related. So while the community has dwindled and a lot of people have had to move away because it's gotten too expensive for them to continue living here. And, you know, Jimmy Bennett has to go all the way to Riverhead to buy food. There still is that community. And many things made me very happy, but one of them was being able to have the community gatherings, you know, that we had. And people would just show up. And the same thing has happened when I do screenings of the film. Large numbers of locals show up, you know, as I said, they'll just fill the place. And then it's also interesting to share the culture with second homeowners, because when I started working on the film and I told my friends I was producing a documentary about the Bonnickers, these are friends who live here in Bridgehampton, in Sag Harbor. They're like, who are the Bonnickers? And I was like, oh, got to change this. This is a story that has to be told.
It's unique to East Hampton. I think a lot of them came as a result of the arrival of Lyon Gardner, and he had a farm and the docks out on his island in the 17th century, and they really populated this area, and these are the descendants going along. I saw in the film, Billy Joel was in the film.
Right.
What that was all about. Do you remember?
Yeah,
that?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, the book Men's Lives, which was written by Peter Matheson and created by Adelaide de Menil. And it was really written as an elegy to the fishermen because their culture was dying off even then, even though it still survives. They were mainly the hall seiners, and there was the East Hampton Baymen's Association. And it was run by Brent Bennett and Dan Eames, and Arnold Leo was the secretary and treasurer, and they were trying to draw attention to the plight of the fishermen because hall seining was being shut down as an industry. And Arnold got a phone call one day from Billy Joel, who had heard about the struggles. And Billy lived in Oyster Bay, and Billy was a fisherman himself. And he called Arnold, and Arnold thought it was somebody pretending to be Billy Joel, but it was Billy Joel, and he said, "I want to help." So they had a Bay Men's Association meeting, and they all decided that they would go out and illegally take the fish. They'd illegally go out and do the hull seining that had been outlawed by the DEC. Hull seining is a traditional way of fishing where there's a huge net attached to a dory, and the dory goes out with a crew into the ocean off the beaches at either Indian Wells or Atlantic Avenue or further down in Nepique. Then they go out as far as they can. When the nets are filled, they're attached to a pickup truck, and the pickup truck pulls them out and back along the beach. So I remember the first time I saw that, there were like thousands of fish in the nets, just horizontal to the ocean along the sand, right? So that day that you're talking about, Billy Joel came down. He had agreed to be arrested in protest to make a point. So they attracted a huge amount of attention. And there are no hull seiners today. So eventually that tradition died out, but, you know, they were able to keep going. And, you know, there was always a struggle between the commercial fishermen and the sports fishermen. And as Arnold Leo says in my documentary, it was the sports fishermen who were wealthier, who had all the politicians behind them, you know, and we, the commercial fishermen, had one politician on our side. So we kept losing, but we didn't lose everything. And the fishermen are still here.
A lot of them have moved away. I was
yes.
moved to North Carolina to the banks.
No, absolutely. And even Kelly Lester, you know, who lives on Hunt Path, and she's in the film. Her dad, Calvin Lester, was one of the hull seiners. He had a dory crew. And, you know, she said that she never thought she would have to move, but she's thinking about it now. And I think she is planning to move. But her son, Will, who's 21 years old, you know, who we end the film with Will, he says, you know, "I'll be fishing to the day I die. I don't have a pension. I love the life," and he will, I hope, knock on wood.
Are you planning to do any more films?
I am. My goal right now is, as I said, we're being distributed across the public television networks. The stations have all lost a lot of money. I'm raising money for the marketing campaign now because we have to go local station to local station to local station. So any of our friends who are watching can go to my website for the Bonnickers and click a little donate button and help with the marketing campaign. And as I said, the contributions are tax deductible. My next film is something that was inspired by learning about the indigenous culture, and it's called Ma-mocracy. It's an antidote to the chaos in our own democracy right now, and it's the wisdom of the indigenous women from the matrilineal cultures who inspired our democracy, the suffragette movement, the environment, and ecology. And, you know, I really want to start recording their stories, their wisdom, also the down-to-earth basics, you know, building on that, and just starting to figure out how to raise money for that. So that's my next thing.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Really appreciate it, Dan.
I think you're doing good work.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.